From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Potrero Hill.
Glen Park.
South Beach.
I live in Bernal Heights.
Coming up, we hear what's important to San Francisco's Asian American community this election season.
I think there's a lot of civic pride. We do not just produce lawyers and doctors and, you know, academics. We can provide civic leaders.
Then it's back to school time. Do you know what your kids are eating?
We get to eat some of the most wonderful food on earth, I think. And it really, you know, should be something that's available to all of our citizens, especially our children.
And we hear the latest installment from our storytelling project, Hear Hear.
70% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch. For many kids, that's really all that they know.
Grab your PB&J and your Trapper Keeper. This is Cross Currents. Stay tuned. Today, we're starting a joint series with our friends at New America Media to hear what various Bay Area ethnic communities care about this election year and where they stand on local issues. Every Tuesday till Election Day, we'll be speaking with representatives from local ethnic media to hear about what's important to their audiences.
For a Chinese American to be mayor of San Francisco, you can't just be a mayor of Asians. You have to actually show that you can be a leader of Latinos, of gay and lesbian groups, of African-American groups, of technology interests, of all the different varieties that make San Francisco rich in diversity.
That's Ed Lee, who's the first Chinese-American mayor of San Francisco. The largest ethnic community in San Francisco is the Asian-American community, which accounts for a third of the city's population. San Francisco is also home to the largest Chinatown in the United States and is a historic entry point for the community. With an Asian mayor and four Asian supervisors, many see this as the apex for Asian-Americans in San Francisco. But what concerns this community the most in 2012? I spoke with Kwok Shu Leong, executive producer at KTSF TV 26, and asked him about the biggest issues for local Chinese American voters this year.
Basically, jobs, unemployment, economy in general, these are the most priority issues to a lot of Asians. And when we look at our, you know, reports, constantly what we are trying to report in the community and what resonates among them. So basically, you know, these are the things. I would only add perhaps education, but, you know, having a job, trying to do your own, you know, small business, these are the things that really concerns people. And obviously, you know, sometimes immigration, the high-tech visas, because a lot of students from China or from Hong Kong or Taiwan, they came here to study, and they have their STEM, so-called the STEM degrees. So they want to, you know, whether they have the chance to pursue their life here in the United States. So I would say these are the issues.
So it's issues of immigrants and issues of children of immigrants.
Yes.
As well, in terms of the education issue. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. What kind of issues are they talking about, especially in terms of City College, which is a focal point this mm-hmm. election year, very important for the Asian community and for immigrant students.
Right.
At what are they saying?
Well, right now, we're already past the stage of whether to have a Chinatown campus or not, because this is a done deal. The building is open. The Chinatown campus for City College is almost like an issue that cut across progressive associations, labor groups, merchant groups, and then, you know, civil rights groups. Almost all people in the Chinese community, they see this as really a milestone, whether we can have this or not, because it will make a big difference. Why am I saying this? Because primarily the Chinatown campus right now is offering almost like 7,500 students, and a majority of them will be Chinese, and a lot of them will be taking ESL classes, learning language, and then the citizenship classes, trying to become a citizen. These are very important because you have the language skills, you can have a better job. And then if you have a citizenship class, which means you will have political power, the ability to vote.
Right. And so that leads us to Prop A,
right,
which is concerned with the funding of City College. What are you hearing in the Chinese community in terms of that proposition?
Well, in terms of the groups, you know, the organized groups, as I said before, this is an issue that cuts across all groups, and they're all very supportive. And so they are coming out and saying, trying to, hey, say to the Chinese voters, hey, this is important. You have to pass this. But then at the same time, you know, you are a voter. But at the same time, you may be a homeowner. So people are concerned about, okay, why am I, you know, paying $79 for the next 8 years, you know, to have this organization, which basically right now is at the brink of insolvency. And there are a lot of reports about, you know, the financial issues,
mismanagement. So are they conflicted there? Is there a conflict?
There is a conflict there, you know. I'm a homeowner. I understand that, you know, immigrants, this provides a great service. And even though Prop 8 provides, you know, some sort of citizenship overseas, but the issue is here. I can oversee the $79, you know, for the next 8 years that I'm going to pay. I have, you know, some control at least from the public how that money is going to be spent. But what about the bigger, you know, part? What brings, you know, the City College into the situation where they are right now? For me personally, I think it's a little bit hard to pass because it requires 2/3, right? It's a little bit hard to pass, even though, you know, the community, there has been a lot of support in terms of fundraising and political support in terms of the groups.
But the 2/3 majority is often hard to pass.
Yeah,
to
and then as a homeowner, you just kind of, you know.
So they're conflicted. Well, it's a very good time for Chinese Americans and Asian Americans. The mayor, Ed Lee, mm-hmm. Four Asian American supervisors on the Board of Supervisors, including the president. So it seems like it's a good time of pride for the community.
Yes.
So what are you hearing in terms of that, in terms of, you know, we've been here for a long time as immigrants and now we're like almost running the city.
Well,
and Norman Yee's running in District 7 now. So what are you hearing in terms of
I think there's a lot of civic pride. We do not just produce lawyers and doctors, or, you know, academics. We can provide civic leaders. And we can provide, you know, politicians. But I think that the next, we really have to ask ourselves the next questions, you know. So what, right? You have the ability to turn out to produce an Asian or Chinese politician. And what next?
What are you going to do?
Yeah. So the next obvious question is, are you going to be a good leader? Are you going to represent the city in a good way? When we look at Ed Lee, our community, I think in general, again, from the business sectors and then from the progressive, I think pretty much we are thinking that, you know, Ed Lee is doing a good job. And for the rest of the supervisors, because as a supervisor, you look at your community, your neighborhood issues, I try to recall, you know, some of the things that those Asian supervisors. I think, in general, they're quite responsive to neighborhood needs. So, like David Chu responding to, you know, all these nightclub fightings in Sunset. Carmen Chu responds to the needs for the business corridors. Supervisor, Board of Supervisors as a whole, in working relationship with the mayor, what we wanted to see more is really the economic side, because people are concerned about, I have my small business, you know, in Sunset, in Giri or whatever, whether I can, you know, make a business out of it. I think that's, as a small business, I'm not talking about Twitter, I'm talking about small business. We wanted to see more, you know, being done to help them.
That's Kwok Shu Leong, executive producer at KTSF TV 26. And we'd like to get your take. Where do you stand on issues like funding City College and Prop A? Call our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And leave us a message. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. As Election Day draws near, education is increasingly in focus, as we just heard from Kwok Shoo Leong. Governor Jerry Brown has repeatedly cut funding for education and has said repeatedly that more cuts are on the way, as much as $5 billion, if voters don't approve his tax increases this November. After years of repeated budget cuts, many people are focusing on the effects on teachers, academics, and extracurriculars. But there's another part of the school day that's often overlooked: nutrition. We stopped by the cafeteria here at Burton High School, where KALW studios are located. Student Angelica Grover says she wishes more food was prepared on site.
I had nuggets and sweet potatoes. They're okay. I wish they were better, though, that they tasted like more like chicken, like actual chicken nuggets. So I do think that they should make the food on site. I think that would be a lot better because we see how they make it. Because in this, we don't actually see how they make it and what's actually in it, and we don't really know.
Across the bay, Oakland is trying to change school food to respond to concerns like Grover's. The Oakland Unified School District serves about 6.5 million meals per year. This volume makes the task of overhauling the school food system a daunting one. While Berkeley's school district has 9,400 students, with about 40% qualifying for free or reduced lunch, Oakland Unified has 37,000 students, of whom nearly three-quarters qualify, and at some schools, the number is over 90%. Given this high demand, Oakland School District recently undertook a study on how to improve its nutrition services department that's responsible for school meals. The report recommends facility improvements, fresher and more organic ingredients, and the construction of a large central commissary with an organic farm. In a district where many students eat most of their food at school, these are big issues. KALW's Jen Chien reports.
It's 5:30 p.m. at Prescott Elementary School in West Oakland, and the first wave of kids is coming into the cafeteria for supper. Kindergartners come in first, toting backpacks and showing off their missing front teeth as they line up to get chili, cornbread, vegetables, and fresh fruit.
This chili makes you healthy.
How come?
I got an apple.
It's healthy food, you know, and I really appreciate them having that.
Laura McCrae's granddaughter, Shayla, is at Prescott.
Some of us just really can't afford to send lunch and stuff like that.
Prescott is one of 9 schools in the district that have started serving supper this year. It's part of a free after-school program that about half of Prescott's students participate in. After-school coordinator Jason Peters says the hot meal, which comes at the end of the afternoon's activities, has had a noticeable effect on the students.
Because hunger is stress on your body, and when those things combine with the doubt that can come into a child's mind about whether they're going to get fed or not, it leads into their behavior.
The cafeteria is noisy, but the kids seem relaxed, eating, playing games like Connect Four or Jenga, or just hanging out.
This year, where we're seeing less of the aggression from our students, and I think some of that is attributed by our supper program and us keeping the kids fed.
Happy birthday, Beth!
Kids at Prescott are not alone in this need. District-wide, Oakland schools serve about 9,000 breakfasts per day, plus 21,000 lunches, 8,500 snacks, and, as of this past year, 500 suppers.
It's really a huge public health issue.
Ruth Woodruff is a founding member of the Oakland School Food Alliance, a group of public school parents who've been pushing for healthier food at their children's schools.
Alameda County has the highest rates of childhood obesity, and we know that that leads to secondary diseases like diabetes and puts people at risk for heart disease.
Woodruff lives with her husband and 3 kids in the city's upper middle class Rock Ridge neighborhood and says she pays a lot of attention to what she feeds her own family.
we stay away from processed foods at home. We eat, you know, we don't eat anything we can't pronounce. We try to eat locally and sustainably. We eat grass-fed when we can and, you know, pastured eggs and, you know, whole foods, essentially. And that's not at all what was being served in Oakland.
She says originally she was just interested in getting more nutritious food into her own son's elementary school. But as she looked deeper into the issues, she saw there was more to do. In addition to medical concerns like obesity and diabetes that stem from unhealthy food, a lot of kids in Oakland simply don't get enough food. An empty belly makes focus and concentration difficult, and the stress of hunger can lead to depression, anxiety, even PTSD. As a result, Woodruff and other reform proponents see school food not just as a nutritional issue, but as a social justice issue.
This goes across racial and socioeconomic lines, and everybody is concerned about the food that we're feeding our children.
And, she says, school districts here in a foodie heaven like the Bay Area should be at the forefront of reform.
We have amazing food here. We get to eat some of the most wonderful food on earth, I think. And it really, you know, should be something that's available to all of our citizens, especially our children.
We've known there is a need.
Jennifer Labar has been the district's nutrition services director for 8 years. In that time, she's consistently fought for improvements in school meals.
Quite frankly, it's been slow and steady wins the race.
The changes have been incremental, but Labar is proud of them. In 2001, Oakland was the first school district in the state to ban the sale of soda and candy on campus. Labar has instituted vegetarian meals on Meatless Mondays. There are now salad bars in 62 of the district's schools and weekly farmers markets at 22 schools. And the district recently did a comprehensive study on what could still be improved. Parent Deandra Kess-McDougall, whose son often eats breakfast, lunch, and supper at Prescott Elementary, says she really appreciates this focus on healthy food.
They have a salad bar for them. They have spinach opposed to, you know, lettuce, or they have fruits and they have vegetables.
She says they already avoided soda and candy at home. But daily conversations with her son about what he eats at school have affected her own cooking.
They taught me to actually how to give him more vegetables and, you know, on how to just focus his mind on the, you know, the four different food groups and stuff like that.
Behind the Prescott School cafeteria is one of the district's two central kitchens. Here, they prepare 20,000 meals every day in a facility that was designed for 8,000. Moves toward automation and individual packaging in the school food industry, plus declining enrollments, have made individual school kitchens financially unsustainable. So, most of the district's food preparation now takes place in centralized kitchens, where a lot of the food comes in already made. Jennifer Labar says one of the things the study found
is that our employees are not underskilled when it comes to cooking. They're underutilized. So for years, we've been paying our cooks to open up boxes of frozen food and put them on trays and stick them into the oven. And they had wonderful cooking skills. We just weren't using them.
The study also found a pressing need for facility and equipment upgrades. Recently, a section of the Prescott playground had to be removed to make room for a loading dock. The kitchen itself is crowded with boxes and heavy equipment, much of it old or outdated. The dishwasher has been broken for at least 3 years, but John Johnson, a 30-year employee of Oakland Unified's Nutrition Services, still manages a smile as he hand-washes some huge metal pans.
John Johnson.
He says he would definitely welcome upgrades to the kitchen facilities.
We got a basically small kitchen for a big operation here. And the more the space, the more the better if we can equip, you know, stuff to bring in, and we can have more room to put things instead of piling everything, you know, in one little corner.
The completed nutrition services study calls for changes like creating a 1.5-acre organic farm and garden and building a new central kitchen. 14 unused school kitchens would be turned into school community kitchens, which the public could access year-round. Now, they just have to find a way to pay for it. The school district has some existing partnerships with community organizations, and it's looking for private funders. The school board may also put a bond measure on the November ballot. District spokesman Troy Flint says that the bond would probably be $500 million.
It's a difficult decision because even though these are worthy projects, it's a really treacherous time to put forth a bond measure, especially in a city like Oakland, which has relatively high poverty levels and high taxation already. But this is an investment in our future.
Still, Jennifer Labar says she feels optimistic.
The time is right. You know, I think if we can't find funding sources, given the climate about people's, you know, people are really concerned about children's health and specifically around the National School Lunch Program. And if we can't find funding sources now, then there's a big problem in the world.
And parents like Deandra Kess McDougall say the investment is worth it.
It all depends on what we eat at home. You know what I'm saying? So if we see them getting nutritious food at school, then that would change our recipes at home because it's changed mine a lot. A lot.
The kids are already on board.
Yeah? Tell me why you like apples.
Because they're juicy and healthy for you.
I like apples because they're crunchy.
Why do you like apples?
Because they're good and good for your body.
In West Oakland, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
What are your children eating at school, and what do you think they should be eating? Join the discussion on our Facebook page. We're KALW News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. As you just heard, for some families in Oakland, it's not just hard to make decisions about what to eat. It's hard to find food to eat at all. The producers of Hear Here, KALW's community storytelling project, spoke with Laurel Elementary Principal John Stengel about what his students face.
Working in public schools anywhere, especially in an urban setting, we're dealing with students who are coming to the classroom without their basic needs being met at home. My name is John Stengel. I am the principal at Laurel Elementary in Oakland, California. And if you didn't hear me say my name, I have my chorus over here repeating everything I say. Hello, guys. Right now, it's around 2 o'clock. Our students are on their way to recess up to the main yard. And our Meals for Minds program should be ready to start in about 20 minutes. Meals for Minds provides quality food for families at no cost. About a third of our families are taking advantage of the food distribution. One of our efforts is to try and increase the comfort level with people to access the food pantry. I grew up in a household that was led by a single parent, my mother, and we qualified for aid for families with dependent children. I remember going into what seemed like a store and pulling food off the shelves. I remember how difficult that was for me as a child. There was such a stigma attached to going to the food bank, or I felt a certain shame that I shouldn't have felt, but nonetheless I felt it. I also qualified for free and reduced lunch as a child, and there at the time there were tickets that students would receive, and I believe everybody stood in the same line, but it was clear who had the tickets and who didn't, and I think it was clear to students what those tickets meant. It meant that your family was in need of assistance, and here at Laurel, where 70% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch, for many kids, that's really all that they know. Our vision is to become a full-service community school, and I think that is in part to meet that need that traditionally hasn't been a need that public schools have had to meet.
Our Hear Here team wants to know about a place in your neighborhood that holds special meaning for you. Your corner store, your park, your kitchen. We'll tag your answers on a map online and might even turn it into a story for Cross Currents. So what's your special spot? Let us know by visiting hearhere.kalw.org. That's hearhere.kalw.org and click on participate. That's also where you can hear examples from other listeners. listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Mu, Leela Day, RTM's Konahoffs, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, RJ Sloan, Eva Sansin, and Anna Sterling. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio, and we'd like to invite you to a fun upcoming event. This Thursday night, our media partners, the San Francisco Public Press, are holding a news quiz night at the Maritime Museum in San Francisco. All news junkies welcome. Details are at KALW.org. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We meet lawyers who do their work from behind bars in a story from the new show, Life of the Law.
It's unfortunate that most of us who get in trouble with the law don't know much about the law. And so after we've, you know, gotten to a situation that we need help to get out of.
Law Behind Bars, that's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. This is the sound of Los Boleros. They're known as Northern California's favorite wedding band, but you don't have to get married to hear them this week. They'll be on the south stage of the Pacific Coast Fog Festival in Pacifica on Sunday. All the details are at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.